Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, May 16th. I'm Joel Ficklin, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt zoning change prompts TPZ debate. Fire safety town hall in Ukiah focuses on home hardening, insurance, and community resilience. And the KMA News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. The Environmental Protection Information Center, or EPIC, based right here in Northern California, has joined 9 other environmental organizations in filing a legal brief challenging the Trump administration's nationwide ban on wind energy permitting. The brief supports the lawsuit filed by 17 states and the District of Columbia, urging a federal court to lift the administration's halt on wind project approvals. The groups argue the permitting freeze undermines clean energy progress, public health, and climate goals, especially in rural and coastal communities poised to benefit from wind development. EPIC Executive Director Tom Wheeler said the administration is, quote, weaponizing environmental laws and pushing false claims about the impacts of offshore wind. We'll have more in-depth coverage of this case and what it could mean for renewable energy in our region next week on KMUD News. A zoning change in southeastern Humboldt County led to discussion over the pros and cons of the Timber Production Zone program. Daniel Mintz reports.
The costs and benefits of rezoning properties into timber production were explored as Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors changed the zoning of a 3,000-acre Bridgeville property. At their May 13th meeting, supervisors approved a zoning change that converts 2/3 of the Buck Mountain Ranch from agricultural zoning to timber production zone, or TPZ. County Planner Andrew Whitney described the rezone as a pretty standard action, and the applicant, Cottrell Ranch LLC, has filed several timber harvest plans over the last 20 years. But the rezone drew some discussion among supervisors, with Supervisor Mike Wilson questioning financial implications. TPZ property owners get tax breaks in exchange for keeping their lands in timber production. Answering questions from Wilson, Whitney said the county will lose about $12,000 a year in property tax revenue with the rezone, although some of that would be recouped through taxing timber harvests. The costs and benefits were discussed in this exchange between Wilson and Planning Director John Ford.
I just want to caution us to, in our sort of like enthusiasm for these changes, I don't really see any net benefit to the county necessarily, other than a landowner has of a very large holding getting a tax break. Or is there another viewpoint on that? And I'm happy to hear it.
You're raising a good policy discussion. But the other side of that policy discussion is that traditionally the county has incentivized, the state has incentivized people to hold land just for the exclusive production of timber.
Yes.
That has been traditionally a very important industry within Humboldt County. And so the mechanism to incentivize that is moving it into TPZ.
Wilson noted that the county's general plan allows residential development on TPZ parcels, and protection of timber production is, quote, not quite the same as when state TPZ laws were created. But Ford said viable timber production still needs to be proven, and if properties are subdivided, parcel sizes can't go below 160 acres. And Board Chair Michelle Bushnell said TPZ zoning helps ranch landowners keep their properties intact.
When you don't have a tax break like this, oftentimes generationally down the road, folks can't keep their lands, and so they end up selling it. And if there were to be structures built, a residence or so on this, that would be appraised differently, and we would see taxation from that. And if TPZ were to come out of it, it takes, I think, 10 years for the buyout, they would have to make up that land, those land tax values within that 10 years. Is that correct?
That is all correct.
So the benefit is that this family can keep this land in their family, which has been, Cottrell Ranch has been there for many years, and they have logged on this land for years and ran cattle on this land for years. They have put money back into Humboldt County time and time again.
Supervisor Steve Madrone has long been an advocate of land conservation through providing incentives. He described TPZ zoning as one of the ways to do it and said preventing land conversion saves the county money.
We might get more taxes by keeping it in AE, but if it does get broken up and subdivided, we have a lot more expenses. More expenses on the roads, from traffic, more expenses for all our public services, and you know, that's parcelization that can occur. And there are a lot of negatives that can come from that in terms of our budget if you add up the whole budget. Not just looking at the tax part of it, but the costs of services and everything else. So this is why this type of tax incentive was created several decades ago, along with Williamson Act for ag land. But this has small pockets of ag land within what is mostly timberland. So it probably doesn't quite qualify for Williamson.
Another change from rezoning from ag to TPZ is that with TPZ, permits for new cannabis farming are not allowed. Supervisors unanimously approved the zoning change. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Food insecurity is on the rise following federal cuts to food assistance programs, and worse may be coming if the government's proposed cut to the food stamps program, SNAP, becomes a reality. KMUD spoke to Carly Robbins of Food for People about how the organization is dealing with the federal funding cuts.
In March, the USDA put a stop to the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, or the LFPA, essentially cutting off more than $1 billion in programs that gave schools, tribes, and food banks the ability to buy food from local farmers, ranchers, and fishermen. In Humboldt County, this has meant a $360,000 yearly shortfall for the Eureka-based Food for People. To get a better sense of how the abolition of the LFPA program is affecting people in Humboldt County, we spoke to Carly Robbins, Executive Director for Food for People, about the work the organization does and how they are handling this cut in their budget.
Food for People is the food bank for Humboldt County, so we do a combination of things to address food insecurity in our county. We work with a network of partners who we provide food directly to, and we also do a lot of our own direct distribution, either through our own pantry, our pop-up distributions, or our child and senior nutrition programs. The end to a program called the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, or LFPA, which was wonderful for the last few years. It has provided funds for not only the food bank, but for local tribes. There's a partner program that was directly for schools. And the point of that was to purchase from local agriculture. So farmers, ranchers, fishermen, that kind of thing. And then use those foods to provide to people experiencing food insecurity. So it has allowed us to incorporate a lot more local fresh produce, a lot more variety into what we're doing in our various programs, and also support our local food system while we're at it. So seeing that go away is, it's a blow to us. It's a blow to the farmers that we've been working with for a long time. This essentially means that the foods we are getting through the USDA are going down. We still have our core allotment, but any of the bonuses that have been helping to make up for that kind of diminishing allotment are going away. Purely on a local economic food system level, the less money that are coming in for programs like LFPA, the less is getting spent locally. So, you know, those funds were going to local farmers who then turned around and spent that, you know, either paying their own employees or within the community. So that is a lot less in funding that is now going to be in our rural community. The farmers who have geared up for this big contract through the LFPA, because we've had a couple of years of the program now might have a hard time finding a market for that produce. If, you know, food bank schools and tribes are not following through on the big orders that we've been doing the last few years, you know, certainly federal support for programs like LFPA that help you include more nutritious foods into what a food bank can offer are huge for that.
In addition, the president's One Big Beautiful Bill, currently moving through Congress, proposes up to a $300 billion cut to the food stamp program SNAP over the next 10 years.
What the food bank can offer is the rest of the safety net that helps people who are experiencing poverty and food insecurity make it through the month. SNAP is a huge one. For every one meal that a food bank can offer a household, SNAP will provide 10. And we're very concerned about the budget resolution that proposes, I think it's $230 billion cut from the agricultural budget. And the largest part of that budget is SNAP. So if SNAP is decreased in any large way, folks are going to have a much harder time, you know, even beyond what the food bank can do, but accessing the foods they need. So we're very concerned about higher rates of insecurity because people have less resources, and we're concerned about our own resources going down. So it's kind of a convergence of things where we're going to have a lot more people and a lot less resources to do it.
Despite these deep cuts in programs that thousands of people locally rely on, Humboldt's Food for People is continuing its work undaunted.
All of this stuff is really scary, and we've been talking to a lot of clients who are worried that programs are going away, and that's not where we're at. You know, we might be looking at a little less variety and quantity in the future, but we're not looking at cutting any programs. And over the last few years, we've been really focusing on expanding our reach. So we are out in more of the rural communities, either working with partners or doing distributions ourselves. We have all of our other core programs are going on. We're still in the midst of our Backpacks for Kids program during the school year, providing food to kids on the weekend. We're planning our summer program soon. All of our senior programs are going on as normal, and we do still have access to foods in different ways. We actually had a fund specifically to purchase locally from farmers because we believe in investing into our local food system. So that will continue. It will be at a smaller scale, but it's going to continue. There are foods we access purchasing ourselves through donations. So we do have food still coming in. It's unfortunate to see any of these great resources go away, but there is plenty out there that's going to allow us to continue services. So that is the positive.
And another positive comes in the form of a $50,000 matching fund promise to the Locally Delicious Farmers Fund from two Humboldt County women. Melanie Williams and Barbara Goldberg decided to act upon learning of the $360,000 shortfall Food for People is facing in the wake of the federal cuts. The matching fund drive goes on through June 6, and you can find information on how to donate on kmud.org.
I would say that investing in the health of a community saves the community in the long run. You know, if you're investing into the health, not just children, but families, seniors, they're staying healthier. They're staying out of the healthcare system. You know, it saves our community in the long run. And making investments in our community, whether that's supporting local farmers or, you know, other businesses, goes a long way to making sure that our community is self-sufficient.
That was Carly Robbins from the Eureka-based Food for People speaking to KMUCH Lauren Schmidt.
Turning to Mendocino, an upcoming fire safety town hall in Ukiah aims to help Mendocino County residents prepare for wildfire season, from protecting their homes and neighborhoods to navigating new insurance rules. The May 19th event will feature CAL FIRE, UC cooperative extension experts, and local fire resilience leaders, offering the latest research strategies in the wake of Southern California's recent firestorms. Sarah Reith shares more.
An upcoming wildfire safety town hall will cover a range of relevant topics for Mendocino County residents, from the science of home hardening and prescribed burns to regulatory changes. According to First District Supervisor Madeline Klein, who will kick off the meeting and introduce the speakers,
this town hall is really based on the most up-to-date information post-LA fires. The goal of this is to start in the home end, so we're going to be discussing what us individually can do at each of our homes, and then moving out, what we can do from a neighborhood level, a community level, and then talking about some of the things that are happening region-wide.
Michael Jones, the UC Cooperative Forest Advisor for Mendocino, Lake, and Sonoma Counties, will offer a presentation about using prescribed burns as a stewardship tool. In addition to being a founding member of the Mendocino County Prescribed Burn Association, Jones has been conducting experiments with prescribed burns in the Jackson Demonstration State Forest, which is mostly a redwood landscape. Fire, he contends, is a vital part of California's ecosystem, and it's well past time to reintroduce it as a management strategy. Brandon Gunn, CAL FIRE's Mendocino Unit Chief, will update attendees on his work in the county and his unit's plans as summer approaches. Scott Grady, the Executive Director of the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council, will share information about how neighborhoods can work together to promote fire resistance. Another speaker will be Jana Valakovic, the Forest Advisor for Humboldt and Del Norte Counties. She's also the Administrator for the UC Cooperative Extension Programs in both counties, where she works with the UC Fire Network on how to make people's homes less flammable. She recently visited Los Angeles, where she was reminded that fire will burn in any type of vegetation, including carefully curated landscapes and urban areas.
So much of our orientation is around fire in forests, and that it's this forest fire that's going to impact our communities. And the challenge is, how do we keep it out of our communities?
A huge part of the answer is reducing opportunities for wind-driven embers to do damage. These embers
are a force really to be reckoned with, and they can find all the little weaknesses in our buildings. And so they come in on the cat and doggy doors. They come in by the open skylight. They come in by the garage door that doesn't seal very well. They penetrate our vents. They land in the debris that collects at the bases of our walls and in the woody vegetation and the wood mulch that we have around the first 5 feet of our houses. And once you get ignition adjacent to your building, you have direct flame contact. And then fire finds a way into that building, which is so perfectly cured and ready to burn. And that puts off a huge amount of heat. We call that radiant heat. And if there's other buildings nearby, then that radiant heat can cause a failure point in the next building. The building then, as it starts to fall apart, more embers are created out of the building itself. Some of those are much larger in size. And that's how you get this really contagion effect.
Wooden fences can act as a fuse leading directly to a structure. A metal gate or panel between the building and the fence can disconnect the flame's pathway. Another major fire-resistant component of any home is a good roof, which is a high-dollar improvement. But ember-resistant vents with eighth-inch or smaller mesh can be a DIY project for any enterprising homeowner with a pair of good shears and a roll of mesh from the hardware store.
While the quarter inch keeps out rodents and other critters, the screen size is big enough that an ember with enough heat still within it can pass through that vent. And if they find receptive material on the other side of the vent inside our house, then we have ignition inside our house. So just adding another layer of metal screen, a pair of metal shears and a staple gun can do a tremendous amount of good.
She's not merciful about beloved flowering plants nestled up against the house.
We've experienced unprecedented fire exposure, and sort of responding to this moment in my mind means you can't do business as usual anymore. What we've been doing isn't necessarily producing a different outcome, and fire adaptation takes adaptation.
That means getting serious about home hardening and defensible space. Even if a homeowner is fortunate enough to have fire insurance, the recovery from losing a home takes years. Many rural landowners in Mendocino County have lost insurance. Some have had their rates double or triple. In an initiative called Safer from Wildfires, California's Department of Insurance has agreed to allow insurance companies to use catastrophic models to inform their evaluation of fire risk, rather than relying on historical conditions. This means that the companies can use the risk of climate change and its accompanying disasters to determine their rates. In return, insurance companies must take property owners' efforts towards improving fire resilience into account. Insurers are also being required to make their decisions more transparent. Valakovic is part of a group that's working to develop a public wildfire catastrophe model at Cal Poly Humboldt. She plans to speak more about Safer from Wildfires at the town hall. At the moment, her advice to homeowners includes raising their deductibles and carefully documenting the efforts they've made towards improving fire resistance. As of 2019, AB 38, sponsored by former Assemblyman Jim Wood, requires that residential property sales in high or very high fire hazard severity areas include disclosures about compliance with defensible space regulations. Valakovic acknowledges that we're in an awkward time, but as fire becomes more understandable and communities learn how to adapt,
I think there's a lot of reason for hope in this space.
The Fire Safety Town Hall will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Monday, May 19th at the Little Theater in Building 700, the Lowry Building, on the Ukiah campus of Mendocino College. It's sponsored by the UC Cooperative Extension, Mendocino County Fire Safe Council, and CAL FIRE. The event is free, but registration is requested. The link is available on the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council's Facebook page.
We now turn to Ray Hamill with the KMUD News Sports Report.
The lineups for the championship games in this year's Charles Lakin HDNL postseason tournaments in baseball and softball have been set. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Lakin tournaments in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including why it was a big week for the high school track and field athletes, how one former HDNL standout is enjoying a stellar spring playing for Stanford, why it was an historic week for local high school swimming, and why it will be a big weekend for local motorsports. But first up, the lineups for the Charles Lakin tournament finals have been set. Both tournaments got underway on Tuesday with two opening round games in each. In the baseball tournament, which is taking place at Bilotti Field across from the Redwood Acres in Eureka, defending champions McKinleyville overcame an early scare on the way to beating the Hoopa Warriors 6-3. The Panthers, who finished runners-up in this year's Big Five, trailed 3-2 going into the bottom of the fourth, but rallied with four unanswered runs to pull out a 6-3 victory. The Hoopa boys were making their first ever appearance in the tournament and came out ready to go, but they were unable to match the Panthers' firepower at the plate late in the game. Also on Tuesday, the Eureka Loggers cruised to a dominating 22-0 win over the Ferndale Wildcats in their tournament opener. Hoopa and McKinleyville also faced off in the softball tournament on Tuesday. Playing at the Arcata Sports Complex, the Panthers prevailed 6-1 to advance to Thursday's semifinals. In the other opening round game on Tuesday, the Fortuna girls got the better of St. Bernard's 13-0. The Huskies, who finished second to Del Norte in this year's Big Five, turned a rare triple play to help preserve the shutout victory. Junior team ace Isabel Sanchez pitched a no-hitter for the win in the circle. The action continued on Thursday with two semifinals in each tournament. In softball, the McKinleyville girls defeated a shorthanded Del Norte Warriors team in the opening semifinal by a score of 12-5. Del Norte was missing six players who had other commitments, including starting pitcher Shay Nolan. Later in the evening, the Fortuna Huskies took care of business in their semifinal against Little Four champion South Fork, winning 7-3. The Huskies, who lost last year's Lakin tournament final to Del Norte, will play the Panthers in this year's decider on Friday night at the Arcata Sports Complex. In the baseball semifinals, the Eureka Loggers defeated Del Norte 8-1, and the McKinleyville Panthers got the better of St. Bernard's 3-0. McKinleyville and Eureka will meet in the Lakin Tournament Championship game for the second straight year at Bilotti Field on Friday night, with first pitch set for 7 p.m. Last year, the Panthers prevailed 4-2. In local high school track and field, meanwhile, close to 100 PRs were set at last weekend's HDNL Championships at Fortuna High School. The girls' team competition went right down to the wire, with the Eureka Loggers barely edging the Arcata Tigers for the victory. Led by outstanding sophomore Elizabeth Rominger, the Loggers scored 135 points, just one more than the Tigers. Rominger medaled in all four of her events, including victories in the 200 and 400 meter races, as well as a second place in the 100 meters. Rominger was named the girls' track athlete of the meet. Delnor Jr. Deacon Hanks also had a big meet, placing first in all four of his events on the way to being named the boys' track athlete of the meet. Hanks broke his own league record while winning the 100 meters, crossing the finish line in a time of 10.7 seconds. He also placed first in the 200 meters. The Delnor boys comfortably won the team competition. The top athletes from the league will compete in this weekend's North Coast Section Championships. The Big Five athletes will return to Fortuna for their NCS meet on Saturday, which will be the first time the section championships have been held locally since 2008. In college baseball, meanwhile, it's been a good spring for former HDNL star Nick Dugan. The 2022 St. Bernard's graduate, who led the Crusaders to a thrilling NorCal championship in his final ever high school game, is in his third year playing for the Stanford Cardinal and is enjoying his best season yet on the college fields. After recording four wins combined in his first 2 years with the team, Dugan is 6-0 this spring, accounting for almost a quarter of the Cardinals' wins. He also has a team best ERA of 4.76 heading into a weekend series at North Carolina State. Back in the spring of 2022, Dugan closed out his high school career with a bang, winning three games in 8 days to lead the Crusaders to a NorCal championship. His legend was cemented when he took over in relief in the championship game and struck out all 13 batters he faced to lead the Crusaders to a come-from-behind 7-6 win. Stanford is now 25-23 on the season, including a 9-18 record in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Elsewhere in local sports this week, Eureka sophomore Amelia Baugh led the HDNL charge at last weekend's North Coast Section Swimming Championships in what was a breakthrough season in the sport for the local league. The sophomore was one of five league swimmers to travel to Concord for the prestigious meet and the first Eureka logger to qualify in more than 15 years. She competed in two events over the weekend and placed in the top 20 out of 40 competitors in each. The impressive sophomore was seeded 37th in the 200 free and exceeded expectations with a 17th place finish. And Baugh saved her best for last, knocking 3.5 seconds off her previous best time in the event. She also placed 20th in the 100 butterfly. Arcata's Yogi True, Bryson Meyer, Hook Russell and Nathan Bareilles each also qualified for the section championships, matching the total number of Tigers to reach the NCS in the past 15 years combined. And rounding out a busy week of local sports, motorsports returns to the Redwood Acres Raceway this weekend with the season opening night of racing on Saturday. The 78th season at the local raceway kicks off with a packed night of racing action that includes the NorCal Legend Series, along with the Mid-City Motor World late models, limited modifieds, bombers and mini stocks. The grandstands open at 3:30 p.m. with racing starting at 5. And that's this week's Caymud News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineers and thanks to our reporters. And a special thank you to executive producer and news director, Lauren Schmidt. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Joel Ficklin.